At some point, I have to imagine your husband started putting the pieces together.
Yes, he did, right before he died.
Was that about the same time that the realization was hitting for you, or did you?
No, what happened was he woke up one morning. He'd been not feeling well. He wasn't really sick, but he just didn't feel up to par. And so he was applying his deodorant one morning under his arm, and there was a big lump. And we went to the doctor and had it biopsied, and it was lymphoma, stage 4B, which is terminal. That's how quick it was. Well, it had been lying in his body for years. We don't know how long. Doctors didn't know. But he was immediately put on chemotherapy and radiation. It's like the hair of the dog that bit you the night before, that radiation. And so he was doing okay the first 6 months. And we were watching television one night, and we saw a man in a VA hospital bed being interviewed by the television reporter. I don't remember his name. The name of the gentleman in bed was Paul Cooper. And he was telling the reporter about what his opinion was of the reason for his leukemia. And he was telling the man that he was in a nuclear test in 1957, and the test was shot. Let's see, what was it? The exercise was Plumb Bob. That was the name of the exercise. And then there were about 20 shots included in that exercise. Well, that was the same thing my husband was in. He was at Plumb Bob, and he was in shot hood with 77 kilotons, and it was the largest shot ever detonated in the atmosphere in the United States. But that night, we knew. My husband called him, Paul Cooper, called him that night. Called him. He was in a Salt Lake City Veterans Administration hospital. Paul was. So Chuck called him, and Paul said, get to the VA the first thing in the morning and file a claim. So we did. The next morning we drove up to Los Angeles, and we filed a claim. I can't remember the exact date. We filed a claim with the VA. Well, the person who took the information was so unaware of any tests or nuclear tests or anything like that, he couldn't even spell radiation. But he took the claim, and that's how it started. Well, I wanted to file a lawsuit right then. I didn't know I couldn't do it. And Chuck wanted to, too. And it was then that he told me that he never wore a film badge. We contacted an attorney in Los Angeles because his name is Ronald Bacall, and there was an article in the Los Angeles Times about the fact that Ron had won a lawsuit against, I guess it was the government. I don't know how he did it. For the Marshall Islanders. He was out in the Marshalls, and he filed a lawsuit on behalf of the Marshall Islanders. So we called him, and he came down to the house. And by this time, Chuck was really sick, and the effects of the radiation and the chemotherapy were just awful. But that's when he did say, yes, I was at a nuclear test, and he gave him the date, and Ron asked him if he had worn a film badge And Chuck said, no, I never wore a film badge. Yet, the government finally, I have finally gotten some of his records, show that he had a film badge reading of 13 millirem. Well, the film badge that he was issued could not record any radiation less than 30 millirem. His badge supposedly read 13 millirem. So, you know, it was, they probably picked it up off the bottom of the trench or something. I don't know. Anyway, he never wore it. But that's all I knew. That's all he would tell me. He did, at that time, however, write a letter, several letters, to the Marine Corps and the Veterans, or not the Veterans Administration, the Marine Corps and the Navy, requesting copies of his orders, requesting copies of orders to, he was exposed twice before this particular detonation of Hood. He was exposed the first time in Nagasaki. He went into Nagasaki right after the bomb was dropped. And he was exposed again when he was taken aboard ships that had been towed back to Mare Island from the nuclear tests in the Pacific, Crossroads, Operation Crossroads. And those ships were highly contaminated with plutonium. Now, plutonium is an alpha emitter. Does not show up on a badge. Cannot detect it by a film badge. So he was exposed. And again, Nagasaki was a plutonium bomb also. So you can't, there's no way that he could be measured for radiation exposure in Nagasaki or in Mare Island. However, we concentrated on the Hood shot. Actually, he observed two shots there. One was Priscilla, and the other one was Hood, and that was in 1957 at the test site in Nevada. But little by little, I was gaining more knowledge. After his death, I filed a claim, and I then spent hours in the Medical Sciences Library at the University of California in Irvine. And one of my daughters and I would go out there, and first we got a printout of all their articles on radiation. And then we went out to the library and copied. We spent days doing this, copying all these articles. So I had something of substance to submit to the Veterans Administration. Each time they denied my claim, which was about six or seven times, I had all this wonderful material that I had spent days collecting and typing and copying. And each time I had a hearing, it was denied. Well, probably because of my lawsuits against the government. if they had given me benefits, if VA had given me benefits, that would cinch my lawsuit, and vice versa. If I won my lawsuit, that would cinch my VA claim. So I didn't get either one of them. But I'm still fighting. I did get it in 1988, as I told you, under Public Law 103.21. However, there are benefits due me from 1977 to 1988. I now have an attorney who is going to represent me before the Veterans Court of Claims. And that court came about because an organization called National Association of Radiation Survivors filed a lawsuit against the VA because the VA would not allow anybody to hire an attorney to represent them before the VA if they paid him more or her more than $10. Now, that law goes back to the Civil War. So NARS, N-A-R-S, filed a lawsuit against the Veterans Administration. I was on the board of NARS as a consequence and a member of the class. It was a class action. And that dragged along for about 8 years, along with mine, with my lawsuit. Mine was in the federal court. That one was also in the federal court, but it was a different situation. What happened there was that, again, that lawsuit went up to the Supreme Court and was denied cert also. But what happened was that because of that lawsuit, we finally got a court of our own. The VA now has a court, and that's where I am right now. I have filed a claim with the Court of Veterans Appeals, and I don't know any more than that about it right now. I have gathered together all my material, and I've copied it, and I will be sending it to an attorney. So that's the essence of it, I guess, is that the only good thing that has come out of this whole thing is the fact that the veterans now have a venue that they can use. It's a court. It's not a federal court. Well, it is a federal court, I guess. But it's only for veterans. But they can, if their claim is denied at that court, then they can appeal to the Federal Circuit Court, and they can go all the way up to the Supreme Court. So that's one thing that came out of this, is that court. Very few people have used it, because it has only been in existence for several years. Another reason probably is because you can't get an attorney to represent you, because they don't know that much about radiation. So what you have to do is to educate. Fortunately, we have an organization that does that. And I've been able to get help from some wonderful scientists who have contributed their time and their knowledge to me and to other veterans and widows on a pro bono basis. My attorney that represented me for those years that I was in court did it on a pro bono basis, because none of us can afford to pay attorney's fees, or we can't afford to pay scientists to do. Another law that pertains to the atomic veterans is Public Law 98542. Now, if you don't have one of the cancers listed in 10321, then you have to file under 98542, which is not a presumptive law. You've got to prove. The burden of proof is upon the veteran. And when I say veteran, I mean widows also. So because the burden of proof is upon the veteran, and because he can't get his records, and because everything is classified, there's no way. Fewer than 50 claims have been awarded under that law, which became effective in 1985. Now that law reads that any cancers could be caused by radiation. But you've got to prove it. Number one, you have to prove where you were, and how many REMs you were exposed to. Were you exposed to alpha emitters? And if you are, how are you going to prove that? Because there's no badge reading. There's no badge reading anyway for most of the guys. So you get hopefully you can get a scientist or a physicist on a pro bono basis to help you. I was able to do that. I'm very fortunate. My last hearing, I had a physicist that did a dose reconstruction, which took him months. Before that, I had two other scientists. But even though you've got all this wonderful proof, and you lay it before the hearing officer, they deny it anyway, on a technicality. So you spend years working and trying to prove a minuscule dose of radiation, to prove where you were, to prove that your cancer can be radiogenic. And as a consequence, as I said, fewer than 50 at last count have been awarded under 98542. So you add that to the 450 that have been awarded under the other law, the presumptive law, and you come up with less than 500. Now, that was as of 1998.
And that's out of 450,000?
450,000.
People have been exposed. Do you think your battle would be considered typical for others who had been other atomic veterans and their spouses who have gone through this?
No. No, I don't think so. I happen to be a very persistent, very stubborn individual. And I've also been a legal secretary for years and a court transcriber. I know a little bit about law. I know a little bit about research. I did know a little bit about research. Now I know a lot about research. I know where to go. I know who to ask. I know what the proper words are. And I'm very angry. I am extremely angry. And I have been since my husband developed lymphoma. And I'm sure that other wives and widows are as angry as I am. I've had many, many phone calls from them. But it's, and they're all over the country. So it's hard I help as many as I can, but I can't do all of their research for them, you see. It's something that each individual has to do for himself. The Veterans Administration is supposed to help the veteran, but they don't. So again, the burden of proof is upon the veteran to, okay, you go out and you research. You go to the libraries and you go to the archives and you find the documents. It's too much of a burden for a lot of people. Some people live out in the country and don't have access to the types of archives or libraries that I have access to. And I'm not trying to belittle any efforts that are made by other people. There have been a lot of people who have been as stubborn and investigative as I've been. But I don't think there's very many of them. And not through any fault of theirs. It's just that they didn't know what to do or how to do it. And again, most of these widows don't even know where their husbands were, which test he was in. And they're not getting any help from the VA. VA says, okay, contact the DAV or the American Legion or the VFW, or any other veteran organization. They'll represent you for nothing. Unfortunately, those guys don't know any more about it than the average widow. So you're caught between a rock and a hard place. So what I have done over the years is absorb myself completely in this issue to the detriment of my family, maybe. I mean, I have not paid as much attention to my grandchildren as I should have. I have absorbed myself into this issue. And I've now come to the conclusion that I'm in the last steps of this issue. Now I have an attorney to represent me before the Court of Veterans' Appeals. My next step now is to gather up, and I've already done this, all the information that I have and forward it to my attorney. Now, he has access to my file, my VA file. But what I have is not all the material that's in the VA file. The VA has lost my file several times. During the NARS lawsuit, they forwarded my entire file to the Justice Department. Well, the Justice Department made copies of everything to 1985, and they said it was a true and correct copy. And this was in 1988 that I was applying for benefits under the presumptive law. I had to have documents from that file to present to the VA. And they didn't have my file. I've got all kinds of letters and telegrams and so forth all over the country where they're searching for that file. I don't know whether they ever found it or not. I went up to L.A. to examine the file they said they had, and it was so voluminous that I could not tell which documents were missing. But over the years, I have sent Freedom of Information Act requests to the VA numerous times, and each time I get a whole stack of records. So I put them all together, and this was before they lost them in 1985. So I think I've got pretty well got my entire file. I don't know. But I'm copying the documents that I feel are pertinent to this lawsuit and forwarding them to the attorney. That's where I am right now. I'm still fighting.
And if you win, what are you seeking in
what
damages
I am seeking,
or compensation?
I'm seeking retroactive benefits from the time my husband filed in 1977 to 1988 when I started getting benefits. There's 11 years of benefits that I'm trying to get. I don't know how much it would amount to because of the various COLAs that have been added over the years. But that's what I'm after. I think more than the monetary aspect of it is the satisfaction of doing it, beating them at their own game. And I probably never will, because they've got attorneys, a lot of attorneys, very highly paid attorneys. So we'll see what happens. I'm not all that optimistic, but I just feel that I've got to do it.
And for people that might be in a similar situation to your own that need resources, or perhaps people who are children of atomic veterans, are there resources that you recommend?
I recommend first that they call the CIC, which is in Las Vegas. They have the files. They have the badge readings. If you did have a badge reading, They have it. It's Bechtel. It's B-E-C-H-T-E-L, Bechtel. Okay, here is a toll-free number. It's 1-800-462-3683. Now, when you call that number, which is the DTRA, D-T-R-A, it used to be the DNA, Defense Nuclear Agency. Supposedly, they have your records. They're supposed to. Now, ask the person who answers the phone for your information. Give them all the information that you have regarding the date of your exposure, your physical condition, and everything. They'll ask you questions. And also ask them for your film badge reading. And in addition to that, ask them for the original 5x8 card. That 5x8 card is very valuable because that is the original before computers. They put everything on 5x8 cards. And they would put the name of the veteran and his exposure on that card. I don't know what success they'll have, but it's certainly worth a try. They've helped me a lot there, and I always tell everybody to contact them. Right now, that other than calling your local, I recommend the DAV. They've been very active on behalf of the veterans as far as legislation is concerned. So I recommend them and the American Legion.
The DAV is...
Disabled American Veterans.
Okay.
They've helped me a lot.
And it sounds like if people are listening and if they don't actually know if their father was perhaps involved for sure in one of the atomic tests, that there's just no way otherwise that you can really access records to find that out one way or the other.
Well, you could send a Freedom of Information Act request to his branch of service. For instance, if you have any documentation at all that says that your husband was in Nevada in 51 to 63, did he have orders there? If he did, it's probably because he was present at the nuclear test. Or if he had orders, if he was in the Navy and he was aboard ships in the Pacific, what dates was he there? Was he there during the nuclear testing era? And they all started in 1946, from 46 to 61, I think the last one. No, 63. And if you have any ship's logs or any deck logs or any kind of information at all, it might seem worthless, but it could be a real gem as far as proof is concerned. And there is a regulation in the code of CFRs, the Code of Federal Regulations, and I can't put my finger on it right now, but there is a regulation that states that if you cannot prove that you were at a certain test at a certain time, that the VA is supposed to assume that you were there. If you could get a letter from your girlfriend or your brother or your whatever that you may have written during that time, that's proof. Anything at all that you might, any records that a lot of military men are they raffle stuff. My husband did. He raffled a lot of his records and unfortunately disposed of them when we moved, which was a real big mistake. But anyway, if you have any records at all. Go through them very carefully, because there might be little nuggets in there that might be to your advantage. Medical records in particular. If you have your medical records, that's important. I was unable to get my husband's medical records for years and years, and I still haven't gotten them all. Those are the ones that were classified.
Any last words or thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I guess the only thing I could share is that you can't give up. You just got to keep fighting, and you get shot down a lot. I did. But it just kind of spurred me on to continue, and that would be my final word, is just don't ever give up.